Juan Morales is the author of the collection of poetry, Friday and the Year That Followed, and now his latest collection, The Siren World. His poems have appeared in Ostrich Review, Hayden's Ferry Review, and Duende. He is a Canto Mundo Fellow and an Associate Professor of English at Colorado State University Pueblo, where he directs the Creative Writing Program. Juan, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Oh, thanks for having me, Daniel.
Do you teach in an MFA program?
No, I'm actually the director of creative writing here, and we're within the English department.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We do offer a master's in English, and you can do a creative writing literature,
right,
or other type of emphasis, but no MFA here as of yet.
Over here at UTEP, when I was first hired, I was hired by the English department because creative writing was housed in English, but we broke away from them as if they were the conquistadores and started our own little nation.
All right.
A nation of weirdos, some people at the university seem to think. I'm really enjoying your poems, man. These are fantastic. Why? I want to just ask you some general questions about poetry because I'm really fascinated by your work. You know, I did some research on you. This is your second book, right?
That's right, yeah. My first book is called Friday in the Year That Followed. It was actually my MFA thesis that when I went to the University of New Mexico, and it was like 2 weeks after I defended it, I got news that a small press out of Oregon was going to publish it.
Sweet.
So I was really excited.
Wow.
Then I spent the next 7 years after that working on The Siren World. It went through a lot of different drafts and versions, and before I found its home with Lithic Press. They're in like the northwest corner of Colorado, really, really cool guys to work with.
It's a very impressive press and a fine book. I'm holding it in my hand. It's called The Siren World, Juan J. Morales. You mentioned that you went to UNM for your MFA. Did you work at all with Lisa Chavez or Joy Harjo?
I worked with Lisa. Lisa was my thesis director, and she was and is still a phenomenal teacher. She definitely helped me whip my poems into shape.
Yeah, she's a fantastic poet to boot.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
Who do you read? What poets do you just keep going back to?
I'm working on like a poetics essay for another poet in anthology, and I was kind of thinking about that as well because when I started my undergrad, I was new to creative writing, wasn't sure what I was doing, and like many other Latina poets, one of the first I found was Martin Espada.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, and I'm half Puerto Rican and half Ecuadorian, so that was definitely like a clicking point. And in grad school, that was when I was first exposed to Rigoberto Gonzalez and so many other poets. And I'm actually a fan of you and Tim as well. And I also become a strong admirer of like Dan Vita, Francisco Aragon, Blas Falconer, and just like the huge, vast network of Canto Mundo poets, Yesenia Mantilla. She has a new book out, and I'm really enjoying that one too.
Have you encountered Natalie Center-Sampico?
No, I've read like her blog posts and her interviews online and stuff, and just kind of what's online, and I'm definitely a fan of hers too. I just got to read more.
Yeah, so. She worked with Lisa as well. She graduated from the same university as you did with your MFA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you teach poetry.
Yeah, I teach poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and drama. So, you know, like we're a small program, so we have to be very flexible.
Right,
and
right.
We have like a manuscript class, so it's like a multi-genre class, so you have to be ready to teach all that. And sometimes they let me out of my creative writing cage and teach literature. Like, like 2 years ago, I taught a Latino science fiction class.
And oh, really that's cool. Interesting.
Well, the main question that we were exploring in that class was the fact that I could only find like 5 books, our anchor text was actually The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Junot Diaz,
right.
And so we kind of like delved into geek world and stuff like that. So.
Nice. But you teach fiction as well, and as I'm reading your poems, one of the things I really love about your poems are they're so visual. I feel like every poem I'm kind of entering into it. I mean, in general, they're very, very visual, and you seem to have a really strong sense of landscape. And I was thinking, this guy should write fiction, but you teach fiction. So do you write fiction?
Fiction is like something I'm like kind of scared to show people, but I have a third poetry manuscript that's out for consideration. So
oh, wow.
Once that manuscript has a home, I have like a I have an idea for a, I don't know if it's a short story collection or a novel yet, but I definitely have some ideas, and I'm starting to kind of scratch the fiction a little more seriously. So
I know how you feel about not being sure about a particular genre, and you know, because what happens with us as writers, I'm sure this has happened to you, when you first start writing poetry, you know, you're kind of doing it on an impulse of just this need, and that, you know, whether we admit it or not, this idea that this is what we're good at. You know, we're writers, you know, this is what we're good at. And you know, it may take years for us to admit it and say, I am a writer, I'm a poet. But you know, that impulse, you know, Bernard Malamud says, you know, we do it because we're good at it. But what happens is, when you first start writing, to a lot of writers, when they first start writing, you think your stuff is, you know, it's pretty good, and it probably is, but then you go back to it maybe a year later and you say, wow, that's crap, you know,
and
you realize you needed to go to a new level, and you can follow your stages that develop, you know, the more you read and the more you study, the more you teach.
Definitely.
And so maybe, you know, that happens when you go into a different genre as well, like fiction. Who are you reading right now in fiction?
I just finished teaching Sherman Alexie's short story collection, Blasphemy, this semester.
Nice. Yeah.
And The Last Communist Virgin by Wang Ping, and I finally have some time to read for fun, so I picked up, I think it's called Red Moon by Benjamin Percy.
Mm, nice.
So, you know, it's like, I guess it's like werewolves and stuff like that, so I have like this, I just have this connection to science fiction and horror from my childhood, so I'm always trying to think about ways to do that and just kind of other ways to kind of challenge myself as a writer.
Wow, that's great. I can't wait to read some of your fiction. I love your poetry. And before we get into the siren world, I'm talking to Juan J. Morales, who just came out with a book called The Siren World, a collection of poems. As a teacher of poetry, what do you think is the most fundamental things that students of poetry need to know that they probably don't when they walk into your workshop?
I think a lot of times when we're teaching creative writing and poetry in general is I do a lot of like workshops with high school students and middle schoolers and even college students where I usually call it poetry for haters.
Nice.
So we can kind of like exercise the demons about like what our assumptions are about poetry, and then we kind of go from there. And then the other thing I like to do is kind of, you know, because my poetry is very narrative driven, I started out with family storytelling, so I always want my students to kind of play to their strengths instead of playing to the what they think the professor wants to receive in a poem.
Right.
I start every class with an exercise, like the first 7 to 10 minutes, and I usually do the exercises with them to kind of build solidarity and just kind of experimentation and exploration. So,
oh, come on, and you do it to steal a little time so you could write first drafts. Admit it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If I'm invested, my students are more likely to be invested.
Oh, absolutely.
Well. So that's one way I kind of trick myself into getting some writing time.
And it reminds me of a quote that I encountered by Robert Frost. He says that a writer should either farm or else cheat his employer.
And, that's so true.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And, you know, you're in the classroom, and what's really wonderful is that you get to teach creative writing. There's a lot of writers that have to, you know, have piled up on composition and stuff. And The Siren World, man, this is a fantastic book. Can you tell us about how this book came about and how long it took you to write and anything you can about it? And then I have some specific questions about some poems.
So I think the first few poems that I wrote for The Siren World were like back in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, looking back, I think it took me about 7 years to write it and to get a home for it. I had a finished draft, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago.
Wow.
But, you know, it kept getting rejected. And
did that discourage you?
No, it you know, of course, at some moments it did, you know, because I had some really close writing friends give me encouraging feedback. And some people were kind of real with me, kind of saying the book in its current state, it's great, but it's not what people are publishing. And so I had this kind of, last year I had this kind of like identity crisis with it. So, because the early incarnation of it, there was a lot, it was mostly Ecuador and Incan poems.
Uh-huh.
So I had like this whole like dramatic Star Wars kind of empire falls and, you know, clash of cultures kind of aspect. So I kind of pulled that back and I ended up cutting 40 pages. And then I had about 30 pages of Puerto Rico poems where I was just kind of like, I don't know what to do with these. And so I had this like what if moment where it's like, well, can I put this Ecuador and Puerto Rico sections together to make one book? And I'm very proud of how it turned out. So.
Yeah, and let me ask you, you said that you had, you know, 5 years ago, you had thought you had a completed manuscript and you were looking for a home for it, but it remained homeless for a while. Do you look back at that manuscript now and say, I am so glad it didn't get published? or are you thinking it should have gotten published?
No. Absolutely. I think it was persistence and patience. It paid off for sure because, you know, you were talking about earlier, like when you read your earlier work and you're just kind of like, man. So like when I read this book in my first book, I have those moments where I read them and I say, you know, that's not bad. So I'll take it as a victory.
Yeah. I say about my first book. I say, you know, it's a good first book.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, not bad. So if it would have got picked up 5 years ago, I probably would have been like, man. You know, because I think the problem with it is I was retelling a lot of history. And in one distinction I have with my first book and second book is I think there's only two poems where I appear in my first book. So I'm just kind of like the storyteller. And I have to, you know, and I'm not trying to diminish the poems, but I also kind of just see I just kind of saw where I had to take it next. It's like, you have to be in your poems, you know, you can't be the fly on the wall like I nag my students.
I was assuming as I was reading the poems that some of the poems are about, if not Juan J. Morales, at least his representative of who he is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely wanted to challenge myself to kind of, you know, be in this book regularly. And you know, like the other linchpin that was kind of like with these two sections of the book, you know, my parents made a decision when I was a kid not to teach me Spanish.
Right, yeah, my parents made the same dorky decision.
Yeah, and I understand why they did, but at the same time, I felt like I had to do a lot of catching up. And that's kind of like the anxiety or the insecurities of the book is kind of like exploring your limitations with Spanish and also kind of rising past them. Because I would call myself proficient now, but I still have a lot to learn.
You make the choice to not italicize your Spanish.
No, I don't. It's part of my natural speech. It's part of my everyday conversation. You know, even my friends that don't speak Spanish, I'll just kind of say, like, you know, I'll see you mañana or...
Right, absolutely.
Or I'll end a question with no, like my mom. So I think I give enough context and encouragement for even the non-Spanish speakers to keep up with
me. Yeah, no, that's an excellent answer because, you know, what I'm thinking is that the whole idea of not italicizing Spanish is an assertion that many, by the way, attribute to... Did you know Diaz, although of course the practice existed, you know, before him with other lesser known writers, but it's an assertion that, you know, Spanish is not a foreign language as you articulated. But what's really interesting is even with those of us who didn't grow up with Spanish as our primary language and who used to overhear conversations that were merely sounds detached from meaning, you know, you could justify the italics, but even us still had language sprinkled into our everyday talk. Like, for example, when I grew up, I didn't speak Spanish, but I always knew how to say, cierra la puerta, you know?
Yeah.
Little things like that, which just came part of our everyday. So that, yeah, so it really is part of your language and part of your world. And how do you think growing up, hearing two languages, one which you were probably very articulate as a kid, I would imagine. You probably wrote stories in your elementary school classes even that your teachers were awed by. But growing up with, you know, English and Spanish as a language that's both understood at times and just sound at times, how do you think that affected your whole relationship to language when it comes to poetry?
Well, when I started writing, I didn't think of myself as a writer, and I just kind of felt like I stumbled upon it. But as I look back, I realized I was just always journaling. I was just kind of like whenever a lot of my poems, they kind of come out of like journaling. Just like when I was visiting relatives in Ecuador or Puerto Rico, or even like in college when I traveled like to England and Ireland and stuff like that. I always kind of set aside like several hours just to kind of journal what I saw, and just kind of work on being a keen observer. And then I was in a crappy band, a ska band in like high school and first part of college. And that kind of taught me rhythm. But when I look back to like my being exposed to two languages, it definitely kind of taught me a lot about rhythm and just context because my parents are, they didn't go to college, so I'm first generation, and I spent a lot of time, you know, like in college, just kind of wondering, should I be here, should I not, you know,
figure out
what I'm doing. And I definitely inherited the storytelling from my parents, and that's why I think a lot of my poetry is narratively driven.
Right.
And so I'm trying to challenge myself to be more lyrical and to also kind of move out of my comfort zone into that fictional realm too.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, one of the things about your language is it's very clean and it's very precise. And so rhythm is not bogged down by you know, language and by, you know,
definitely,
by words. And so, you know, clearly you're very practiced, you know, very skilled poet. I don't know if this is so much a question as maybe just something you can kind of comment
sure.
on. But, you know, I think of James Joyce all the time. And I think of these passages in Ulysses and in other parts of his work where he hears Gaelic, you know, he hears somebody
yeah.
speaking it. And to him, it's just sounds. Yet because that's his, you know, supposedly native language or the language that he should have learned, the sounds he knows have meaning behind them. He must know, and they must be sounds that he grew up with, kind of like I grew up with, you know, Cierra la Puerta, even before I knew what it meant.
Yeah,
And so sounds are separated from meaning, and when that happens, I think it gives us, you know, those who've experienced, you know, a native language that we didn't understand as sounds and as rhythms, it gives us the idea that language is something that can be played with musically and does not necessarily have to be attached to meaning.
I agree with you. There definitely has to be music to it. And in the last 3 months, I've done about 22 readings to promote the book.
Wow, you that's
know?
A lot.
And, yeah, it's been really fun to get out there, but I've noticed I've been trying to push the performance aspect of it, and you know, I always say I'm gonna one of these days memorize my poems because I admire poets that can do that, but I don't. But I do like memorize passages or parts, and you know, going back to what you're talking about with Joyce, you know, I think we can learn a lot from him still.
Absolutely,
and, like the way that Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, which I really admired when I was an undergrad, you know, it kind of starts with the infancy of language and then it mm-hmm. kind of grows into him realizing he has to leave Ireland to appreciate it.
Yeah.
So, and I've always lived in like Colorado, except for the grad school stint in New Mexico. And I love New Mexico. But I think I had to go away to kind of realize I wanted to be back in Colorado and,
right.
also kind of explore.
And then there's also another level of going away that, you know, you are part Ecuadorian, part Puerto Rican, and
yeah.
there is that also distance from the land, not just the language, but the landscape itself. In fact, you have a lot of poems, well, a couple, I shouldn't say a lot, that's probably overestimating
sure.
it, that evoke Pizarro, the conquistador. What does he mean to you as a metaphor, as an image that keeps popping up in your book?
You know, I want to definitely call him insulting names for sure.
Right. Like Cortez the killer.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely this aspect of atrocity that has to be associated with Francisco Pizarro, but he also died a very violent death. So it's kind of like he reaps what he sowed. And I guess like culturally, why I was exploring Pizarro and other conquistadors is this fact that's kind of like half of our heritage,
right.
You know? You know, the mestizaje of ourselves is, you know, like we're like the clash of these two cultures and the union of these two cultures, and that, you know, it's very complicated. You know, I think the poems are trying to ask those hard questions about like where we come from, but there's definitely no answers to that. So we have to kind of just accept all the atrocities and the richness of our history for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it just fits metaphorically into the meaning of the book itself, because in many of the poems, the speaker of the poem, of course, is caught between two languages, caught between two worlds, caught between, you know, a lot of things, actually. And and that certainly represents part of our Latino experience. I'm looking at the poem called Ars Poetica on page 62, which I think is a beautiful poem. In a sense, you know, what is poetry? You know, what is the art of poetry? I wanted to ask you to maybe if you could describe what poetry means to you and whether or not poetry is necessary.
In in all my years of teaching, I've seen poetry like kind of lead to so much discovery. And you know, I've worked with I've had students that are like Iraqi and Vietnam vets, and just kind of they kind of just talked about how poetry saved their lives, you know. And I could definitely say the same for me, you know, for sure, because I, in a lot of ways, poetry found me, because I didn't know where it was. When it comes to this poem specifically, at the time when I was writing it, I was you know, like I said, I'm into ghosts and horror movies and things like that. Like I used to, for like a small stint, I was doing some ghost hunting.
Oh, sweet. That sounds fun.
It's very fun, but it's also very tedious and boring. So,
if the ghosts don't show up, you gotta think, hey.
You're just kind of sitting in the dark for several hours. So I always bring a notebook with me when I still do those things. But so I was kind of trying to capture this kind of idea of like the elders, you know, these spirits just kind of being in the room with you, you know, through the language, or just like kind of. What if they were literally there, kind of coaxing you into the discomfort that kind of comes with a good poem? So, you know, because like the bad mouthing your handwriting, the phantoms to be engineered, you know. So I still feel like this importance of how poetry, you know, is one of the oldest forms of storytelling, and it preserves. And I think that's one of the things I really want to do with my poetry and prose is preserve.
Well, it's very exciting that you're really a young poet and you've got another book out there and you're going to have fiction coming out. It's very exciting because
Thank you. You
really present an amazing version of the world. The book is The Siren World, and it's by Juan J. Morales. It's a collection of poems, just came out. Juan, would you be willing to read a poem?
I'd be delighted. Yeah, awesome. For sure. Do you have a request, or should I just pick something?
Yeah, go ahead and pick one that you like reading.
Okay. I'll pick this one because when I read, a lot of people respond well to it, and it's a pretty short one. Okay. So, and I think a lot of people can identify with it. So it's called What I Said One Time When a Woman Called Me Jose.
Oh, yes, I do like that poem. And it is, I must say, it's funny, you know, and it's really a nice relief in the book when I got to that poem. It was just kind of like nicely placed. So good choice. Let's hear it.
Thank you. So what I said one time when a woman called me Jose. Not all Mexicans are named Jose, and not all Mexicans are Mexican. And in fact, there are other countries where they also speak Spanish. And I am actually a U.S. citizen born in this country, and English is my first language. I stopped when she apologized for being inconsiderate, said it was an honest mistake, and then my mean streak kicked in to convert her guilt into a seething sun's glare when I told her, "That's okay. My middle name is Jose."
Juan Jose Morales. So that's what the J stands for. Ha!
Yes.
Juan, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. And the book is The Siren World. I wish you the best of luck with this.
All right. Thank you so much, Daniel, for having me.
Thank you.